On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Christmas Eve, that music can mean only one thing. It is World Juniors time, a TCA annual tradition for your Christmas Eve. Matt over here, Rob out there in Canada. What are you saying today, man?
A tradition like no other.
Yes.
Am I right?
Of course, man.
You can almost hear the sleigh bells.
Brings all the same prestige as the other guy who utters that sentence from time to time. Merry Christmas, man.
Merry Christmas to you, too. How are things going over there?
You know, it's a little different this year, but we're all facing that the same, right? So Merry Christmas to the good listener as well. We got questions. I think some of you are skipping episodes because we've mentioned this in previous shows. Yes, we're going to do the World Junior show again. Still getting tweets, still getting messages. You're going to do the World Junior Christmas Eve show? Yes, we told you. And if you'd have been paying attention, you would know that, man.
Although we're willing to let you go because clearly you care.
Yeah, not enough. I need to be loved, man. I need them bringing more. I need them to listen to every single episode. That's how that's got to go.
It's actually adoration, I think, is what Matt's looking for.
Always.
Yeah.
At some point, it's got to come.
Right? Sometime. At some point, it has to arrive.
We heard you crack one open. We have come to the end of the Nita Craft Holiday Beer Calendar 2020. What are we kicking the show off with today?
I am kicking it off not with today's beer from the calendar. I've promised to share it with somebody post show.
Okay, fair enough.
So I did see what it is, mm-hmm. but I'm going back a couple of days, and I am right now enjoying the Black Sunshine from Whippersnapper, which is their black lager.
Yeah. So that was from the 22nd. Cracked that one open the other night.
It's the one you and I drank behind the dumpster out behind your place.
Like an old high school dance.
high school dance.
Smoking and drinking and fighting and.
Yep. Oh, see, you're from Lakefield, you know, north of 7, baby. That's
how dare you say that shit to me.
It's Christmas, man. It's a festive time. Not the time to be hurling insults.
Hey, the old Norwood A&W is already shut down, and COVID claimed a victim.
or as Dofo would say, COVID.
Yes. Why does he do that?
I don't know.
Makes me crazy, man. His fucking press call. He's the worst talker ever. Normally when you get, let's not get political Christmas Eve, but I will say, normally when you get somebody this stupid in politics, they are at least charismatic and well-spoken and get you to follow their shit. Not this clown. I have no idea. Merry Christmas.
Somehow we've ended up with Tommy Boy. Not entirely sure.
I am sticking with the 24th selection does come from Nita. And we've mentioned this off the top that they like to take the first and 24th slot. I think that's only fair when you do all the legwork to put this thing together. It kind of resembles the old like Orange Crush or cream soda or whatever. So this is the Cranberry Crush. We're feeling festive on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. And so it's a ghost, I believe. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not what you think. It's.
I got more time for this one than we talked about it on Sunday, I think. There was another cranberry in here.
Well, that was a Radler. Yeah. That was the Crandemonium from Perth Brewing, I believe.
This I don't mind. I got time for this.
Well, because the ghost is more beer than juice, right? I haven't had this, but I'm imagining this has got...
Yeah, it's got a little more fizz to it, a little more carbonation. It's a little more beery. I kind of dig this, man.
Yeah, and a little more subtle cranberry as opposed to the other one was sort of the radler.
Blam!
In your face, yeah, because it was, like I said, it was sort of getting me right in that behind the molars, kind of making you salivate a bit.
So not a bad way to wrap this one up. What did you think? I guess, I think we normally hit on this before we get into the World Junior stuff. What did you think of the calendar in general this year?
I liked it.
Okay.
I liked it. To me, there was a lot of pedestrian sort of, more wheat beers and early on session IPAs.
Yeah.
But to me, there was some interesting stuff that stood out. So, and that's really what I'm looking for. I wish that every brewery would put their best foot forward.
Right.
Not their most average foot forward.
Well, I wonder if they got boxed in here a little with trying to hit the, you can only get this in brewery so that it was more unique, right? There's no LCBO options. A lot of these breweries, if you put your best foot forward right into the LCBO and make sure people, if they're seeing you, they get your best shit, right? And I get what you were doing here. Exclusivity, you know, it feels kind of neat. These are brewery only selections, but maybe that means you didn't always get the best of what they have to offer.
Yeah. And I think also when Andy was on, he was talking about you got to hit that 1500 cans.
Yeah. Yes.
which is no small feat for some of your smaller breweries, right?
Yeah. No, you're right about that for sure. So I will generously, because it's Christmas, give it a thumbs in the middle.
Underwhelmed, Matt was underwhelmed.
Nothing, or not much. There was only one that I didn't finish, right? There's only one that I poured out, and that was the last cranberry one.
The Radler.
Yes. Everything else was at least drinkable, which is a low bar to clear, but everybody else cleared it. But not much that I'm like, I've taken notes on went, yeah, I'm going to go grab some more of that in the new year. There's not many of those. Now, we had Leanne the other night, the Amber. I think that was the 21st, maybe. Or it was a red, I guess. I liked that one.
That was the Amber from Calabogie.
Yeah, I liked that one. That was a nice little beer.
That is the Scottish Heather Ale.
Yeah.
And honestly, I fired that under my helmet in under 5 minutes.
Okay. So it was a winner at your house, too.
It certainly was.
There was two things in the first week. I don't have them here in front of me that I did. The other one was from Nita. It was their Amber as well, I believe, now that I think about
it. Squared.
On day one. There's been a couple of IPAs. There's one thing I did notice this year, maybe a little boozier than some years. A lot of high alcohol content stuff this year. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sid Vicious.
That was a pretty good beer.
The Imperial IPA.
Yep.
right? From Orleans.
I think that was a 9-point something.
That was nine, yeah. And so to me, there's some stuff I go back to. The Calabogie, mm-hmm. which was the Leanne.
Yeah.
Again, I was impressed with five paddles at a Whitby.
Yeah, that was the coconut cream pie.
Yeah, I liked the Hops and Bros out of Tuque de Brew.
Mm-hmm.
To me, those are things that I would absolutely hit again. So that's really, and again, this is my second Black Sunshine from Whippersnapper.
Right.
So I also really enjoyed what Covered Bridge had to offer at a Stittsville with the Cabana Souk.
Oh, yeah. And we've had that in studio before. It's a nice beer.
Yeah. So to me, there was, I like the darker stuff. Mm-hmm. I could go for the ambers. I'm really, this time of year, I'm not really interested in your wheat beers, your lagers, your
American ales.
Exactly. Those are all sort of meh. But I do get that if I can get three or four beers out of this that I would be interested in taking down again, mm-hmm. to me it's a hit. And I love the idea. We have we actually had three advent calendars going on in the house this month. One is a chocolate one.
Yeah.
One is a jam one.
Really?
And the beer one.
Jelly right? of the Month Club.
Oh yeah. Well, so honestly, it's Bon Maman, which
good mom.
Yeah. Moment.
Oh.
Like moment.
Yeah. Close
yeah,
not Maman. Okay,
I get what you were saying. But yeah, the chocolate one comes with four pieces per. So yeah, hey. we crack open the chocolate, we crack open the beer, and which is really why I have to hold on to the Cranberry Ghost, because the 12-year-old in the house was super interested when that one came out and went into the fridge. She was like, hey, that looks interesting.
Right, so, okay.
Post-show, she's going to get a pull on that. So,
fair enough.
For her, only for her to say that she doesn't like it. But yeah.
What else is new? Yeah, why don't we move into what we're here to talk about, man? The 2021 World Junior Hockey Championships.
Is that happening?
Appears to be. Kicks off on Christmas Day this year. Been a while since we've done a Christmas Day one. At least 10 years, got to be.
Or more.
Yeah. I can remember there was some early years where you'd like finish up, you know, Christmas morning and fire on the TV, and they were maybe somewhere over in the Czech Republic just pummeling France on Christmas Day. Like, that seems to stand out to me. But it's become less and less the tradition. The reason for it this year, all games are being played in one rink. Normally, this tournament requires two. But to limit the size of the bubble and the footprint that this all takes up, they're going in one rink. So the tournament's going to run a little bit longer, and they needed the extra days. So the tournament will kick off Christmas Day with three games. Canada gets it going on Boxing Day with a matchup against the fresh from their slumber Germans. They've had a rough go of it. The Germans will also have already faced Finland. So a little rough there. The travel's been strange. Everyone had to be bubbled down. I did have a great note sent to us by our buddy Kyle in Boston, who's listened forever. He said, all these teams, and I'm paraphrasing his email, all these teams of teenagers showing up having to do a four-day quarantine before they start the tournament on the same week that Pornhub deleted half of itself. What are these kids doing in hotel rooms by themselves trying to kill time?
Kyle, I see what you're doing there, but if you harken back to when you were 18 or 19,
didn't need it.
The $5 million that they have offering will be more than...
It'll get you through just barely. Yeah,
for sure. If you remember what it was like when you saw that topless photo of Linda Carter. I think the $7 million or $5 million that they do have on the site is probably going to be sufficient. But Kyle, point well made.
So everybody got through it in some way or another. The Swedes ended up, before they even came, they left. I want to get the COVID-related stuff out of the way here, or at least we can just talk about the tournament, but it is a factor, so we'll hit it. The Swedes left half of their coaching staff behind. There was talk. There is a Swedish coach working on the Kitchener Rangers staff that he may have been sent because he was already in Canada, as well as Daniel and Henrik Alfredsson here in Ottawa offered to go and coach if that was a possibility. But I guess the IIHF rules that had been put in place, you haven't been in the practice bubbles and quarantines with them. We can't be adding people even if you're already here in Canada. The Germans had it way worse. Had 8 players test positive upon arrival. The Finns have left one of their top scorers home. So the German, the whole pre-tournament schedule got shuffled around in terms of your exhibition games because the Germans couldn't play, and the Swedes really weren't up for much either. So there's some teams that are just going to be rolling right into this, you know, having been spending all their time in their hotel rooms with very little practice, certainly no pre-tournament games. But we're here, and we're firing it up. Initial thoughts on just the road to get here and, you know, the fact that we have made it to the starting line.
Right. And now we've done this quite a bit. We talked about the travel. The one thing that I'm interested in / puzzled by is, why is it only a 4-day quarantine when you arrive? Right. To me, why is it not a 14-day? And the second thing is, all these countries were supposed to be taking all these precautions prior to flying, right? Yes. Testing. How are you having positive tests upon arrival? That to me was interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I listened to Jan Eggert, who is the assistant GM for the Ottawa 67s, mm-hmm. holds a Swiss passport. He's over there he's in the bubble doing video work for the Swiss Federation. And he was echoing the same things, or I'm echoing his sentiments, which is unclear as to why this is happening when you're supposed to have taken care of all of this in advance.
Yeah. And I think that's been a point of contention for a lot of people I think the 2 points you've brought up are connected. I think you were only supposed to have to do a 4-day quarantine upon arrival because in theory, your training camp in your home country was bubbled and sealed, and there wouldn't, you know, any cases that anyone came into camp with would have been resolved before getting on a plane. And that just did not turn out to be the case. And like you said, with the Swedish coaching staff, and there was, I believe, a couple, like I said, one of the Finns, Pustula, I believe is his name, and he was expected to be on their top line, has had to stay home. There was other country, the Americans even had a couple of, you know, you'd think if they could set up, they got the resources to run a tight bubble if they'd wanted to, but they lost guys at the last minute. But you're right. If you weren't able to have this contained before you got on your plane, that needed to be more than a 4-day quarantine on arrival. But here we are. And with the time it takes for this thing to show itself sometime, you know, we can't just assume that's it. There'll be no more cases in the bubble. So,
correct. And really, it comes down to like you look at right at the selection camp for the U.S. team. They lost Beecher and Beecher's Chris Beecher, I believe, and his roommate, who were both going to play significant roles, I think, for the U.S. So it's funny. Beecher tests positive, and your roommate's got to go. You're like,
fuck you, buddy.
Yeah, you're like, are you kidding me? Well, it's like one of those things. Why are they rooming them together? It's,
yeah.
When you have this sort of, you know.
Well, I wonder, was it his university roommate or in camp? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, just in camp.
Because at the tournament, everybody's got their own room, as Kyle in Boston has pointed out so clearly.
Yeah, perfect. you also have, if you look at countries that can ill afford, the Germans they've lost Reichel.
Yep.
Right. And he was likely their number two man.
And
behind Stützle.
And their defenseman there, drafted by the Red Wings last year, Morin's Sider, he stayed back. And I guess only because there's no relegation this year. They've decided because, you know, you didn't get the real experience and we don't know what this is all going to look like. Everybody who's in the tournament this year will be in it next year. Countries won't be relegated. And I guess coming out of the German Federation, the talk was that had relegation been a thing, they'd have brought him to try and stave it off. But his development was better served to stay in the German men's league since, you know, this isn't going to really change much for the Germans anyway in terms of what it'll look like next year. So, yeah, you're right. Like some impact guys.
But, yeah, so between Sider, Reichel, and then there's the other guy who was drafted by Buffalo top of the second round this year. They could have been competitive, I think.
That could have been a contender.
Yeah, in a weakened division that they're in, right? I think they could have he pushed for third in that division, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure the Swiss are going to feel differently about that, but
yeah.
But yeah, you take those couple of big hits and that team takes a step back big time.
Why don't we talk a little about Team Canada? 20 of the 22 skaters, first round picks. 14 of all 14 forwards are first round picks. So it's just a couple of defensemen. Interesting though, only 5 guys on the entire team have played any league games anywhere this year. You have 5 more who were in the NHL bubble over the summer, but only 2 of them played games. So there's a lot of talk that with the NHL being shut down, this is one of those dream team years, like we've seen in Grand Forks in 05 and to a lesser extent, you know, 2013 and that, and back in 95. You get these years where you get more guys who might typically be in the NHL than you're used to. I said, and I took some shit for it online, so I guess it was somewhat provocative, that I'm not sure what to make of this Canadian team this year just because of trying to get their legs underneath them. And that was before they had a 14-day chunk of their training camp taken away as they were all locked down. This is, on talent and reputation, a stacked team, but there's some question marks.
For sure. For sure there is. Which is a great leveling, right? When you compare that the Russian team competed in a men's tournament and won it together, right? As this team. So just in terms of the run up to the tournament,
yeah,
the difference between the two teams, right? And I think that is your closest competition. So that will be worth looking at and how that all shakes out. But yeah, you're right. There's going to be some heavy legs, right? How far will the exuberance of of getting into game action go, right? And how long will that adrenaline surge push you?
And you could see Canada was already worried about this long before they got to Edmonton and long before the quarantine that they had to endure during training camp. Their pre-tournament games were scheduled to be Sweden and Russia. Now, the Sweden game was wiped out. The Russia one, of course, took place. But they knew, like, normally, what do we normally hit? Finland and, or Switzerland. It's always Switzerland we play once and somebody else.
The Czech Republic.
Sure, and you kind of ramp it up slow, right? It's rarely two of the powerhouses that you're going to face off against. And they wanted immediate competition, like, let's see where we're at right away. And so that was taken away from them a little bit. And, you know, by nobody's fault, but this will be fascinating. Craig Button's been on TSN. He says this might be the most talented Team Canada he's ever seen at a World Juniors, and he expects them to run the table undefeated. And I get that on reputation, but I just, there's no evidence that would allow me to, you know, take that same stance that Craig is saying. Like, we just haven't seen anybody play since March, including your goalies who haven't been in none of your goalies have been in a game since March.
Right. And we've listened to a lot of talking heads who have thrown caution to the wind and gushed about this team, right? In terms of, you know, throw the sticks out on the ice and it's good for a gold medal. So rarely does that happen, right? And so with all those other factors you're talking about, it'll be super interesting to see. And again, it'll be interesting to see how the goaltending, to me, that's going to be that's the biggest thing, right? Is where the goaltending shakes loose here.
Well, like I said, none of them have played since March. So you've run them out into some pre-tournament, you know, one pre-tournament game where, you know, you kind of had to split. And then before that, it was just your exhibition games against each other, or, you know, your intramural, inner squad. Yeah. And you didn't even get your games against the CIS, which obviously got canceled when that big part of your camp was taken out. So the goaltending is going to be huge. And if we kind of, you know, we'll keep bouncing back and forth here, goaltending is going to be huge in this tournament. When you look at the Americans and the Russians, both coming with heavy, heavy hitters in Askarov and Spencer Knight, right? Like, there's going to be top end goaltenders who have played. And this is a little like last year with Nico Dawes and Joel Hofer. neither of them were in Team Canada's plans until they got, like, they weren't even invited to summer camp. They had killer starts to the season, and they started Dawes, gave him a little rope, and eventually Hofer took over. This is going to look very much the same way. Like, I'll be shocked if there's a, you know, a you know what I'm saying? Like, a predetermined, locked-in number one guy. We just don't know.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you look at last year, they had Dawes, who was an undrafted.
Yeah.
Right? He had just come off. He had taken Guelph to the Memorial Cup. Mm-hmm. And they were like, he's the guy. But it's one of those things where you go, ah, it feels shaky.
And he right? was.
And if you look at it, and I want to throw the Swedes into the mix too, in terms of they're returning their goaltender.
Right.
Who only had the one loss last year. And then they also have a draft eligible Willinder.
Right. Okay. Right?
Like, they have a couple of options there in net that I think Canada would be envious of.
Yeah.
Now you look at what may be the front runner in Devin Levi.
Yeah.
Right. It's a guy who played played for the Carlton Place Canadiens last year. Right. Now, worth noting, he put up a record of 36-2-1.
It's not bad.
This just in. Yeah. And now, and he also,
he's the only 19-year-old of the group as well, which maybe, you know, like you said, front runner, just based on maybe maturity and.
Well, and he was, in the under 18s, he was the goalie of the tournament for Canada in a silver medal effort.
Right. Too. Okay.
So in the same building, right?
Yep.
So I think he's on, you know, Hockey Canada's radar, but none of these guys are your Jamie Storrs.
Well, we haven't had a goalie go pillar to post since Carter Hart's second go around, which I believe was the 2017 yeah. tournament. So it's been a couple of years, and it doesn't often happen for Canada. We do end up bouncing back and forth a little bit, and sometimes that's just the, well, we'll let both guys, you know, you'll play Norway and you'll play Kazakhstan.
Denmark.
And yeah, we'll find out. You don't know anything more at that point. But this will be, you know, early on especially, maybe the story of the tournament. The other thing I find interesting is a couple of names that we're going to get to know here pretty well, because it looks like Coach Tournier, is that where?
Tournier.
Sure. Alex Newhook. Peltier and Holloway looks like it's going to be the third line. Like he said, he likes those guys together and he wants that to be kind of the checking line. He said, I'm willing to move some other guys around and see what this is going to look like, but he wants those guys, and he's almost exclusively in their scrimmages played them head to head with the Kirby Dach line, just to, you know, see, can you handle a shutdown kind of role against the best we got yeah. in house. But everything else is going to be pretty fluid, but at least going in, that seems to be the one line that early on has been locked in. We've seen Kirby Dach center a line. We've seen him on the wing, on the top line. Byfield's been up and down, but the last couple of rounds he's been fourth line center.
Fourth line.
So, yep. Again, a lot of shuffling here I think you're going to see early on, just because we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and it's funny because it's one of those things where they start to throw out names, right? And you go, oh, and then this guy, like the idea of playing Suzuki and Perfetti together,
mm-hmm.
like there's a custom duo coming out that play together in Saginaw. And you go, can you imagine they're playing somewhere down your lineup? Like just the options
yeah,
that you
yeah.
have available to you are amazing. Right.
Well, like and even so, a kid like Tomasino, who obviously I'm watching, he's an Oshawa Generals kid. There was times last year, and Mackenzie pointed out, he's the one who gave the stats. I didn't have this, but you know, there were times last year that he may have been the most dominant offensive player, straight offensive, in the OHL. There was a 17-game stretch. He had 44 points. Like, that guy's probably also going to be on your fourth line, maybe with Quinton Byfield. And you go, hey, like, if well, this rolls, this could really roll.
And amongst all the things with the forwards that I'll be fascinated to watch is I've been hearing about Newhook for, like, it feels like 18 months now,
mm-hmm.
and have never laid eyes on him.
Okay.
Right? Prior to this. And so, to me, this is going to be an exciting look. And the other thing is, Quinton Byfield, who, you know, you've been listening to all the talk about how they've been, you know, I would say not impressed,
yeah,
perhaps.
Right.
That may be too strong. I'll go back to your take on the advent calendar, underwhelmed.
Yeah.
perhaps with, but worth noting, yeah, for a guy who's 6'4", 225, he's still the youngest guy on this Canadian roster.
Got that, right? Here on my notes. This is one of the very rare times that for 2 years in a row, you could be the youngest guy on the team. That stuff is saved for your Spetzes and Crosbys and Bowmeisters. Exactly.
Yeah. And so to me, a big guy always takes a little longer, right? And mm-hmm. and because he was that option that could have fallen to Ottawa, right? And there was Ottawa made no bones about it in the draft that they were going to take whoever fell to them, right? Whoever the Kings didn't take between Stützle and Byfield. And you know, I wanted Byfield originally, then late, you know, before the draft, I sort of moved over to the Stützle bandwagon. But then as soon as Byfield got taken, you're like, oh, I got some regret already, right? You go, look at the size of that guy and how well he skates in the hands. And and then you know, the people saying, well, you got Logan Brown and, you know, big man, you know, soft hands. And you're like, oof, maybe we want to just hold on to that. And then you look at the slow start here. And so I'll be really interested to see what this tournament looks like for Quinton Byfield. And personally, I hope he tears it up. I hope he finds a role and
because he was in the top six to start the tournament last year and ended it as the 13th forward. So again, youngest kid on the team, he's 17 or whatever at the time. So it's not unheard of to think that that's how that might go. But you certainly would like to see him have a better crack at it this year.
Yeah, well, and will he be given that opportunity, right? And will he seize it when he is given it, right? Yeah. Those are the things. So there's lots of interesting options, right? In terms of that Doc Cousins and, you know, will Jack Quinn stay up there, right?
Yeah, well, and at one point, and like I said, I think we're going to see a bunch of different combinations here, as you've pointed out as well. But at one point, looking at the proposed, you know, going into camp, top three centers of Cousins, Doc, and Byfield, three big, strong dudes for this age group that would have been your 1-2-3 centers. And there was just nobody in the tournament that was going to match up with you that way, right? That dominance down the middle. And they could still go to that. But it does look like right now they've kind of loaded up with Doc playing with Cousins on that top line. But an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, and I was interested in the when they ran out for at least one of the red and white scrimmages, they ran out. It was McMichael's, Doc, and Cousins.
Yep.
And they were building it as the Run DMC line. Honestly, can you not hear every goal that gets scored? The little It's Tricky. Oh, come on. It writes itself, man. It writes itself.
That song came out 12 years before any of these kids were born.
12, maybe 17. But true. Still, you're going to go Run DMC, man. What are you going to do?
You mentioned Alex Newhook there a little while ago. And as you said, you know, we haven't seen a lot of him. Just a little note here I've got. Last year, Dawson Mercer was the first Newfie on the team in 10 years. Alex Newhook, also from The Rock, will join him this year. So this will be the first time on Team Canada we've had two Newfoundlanders since 1992. Can you name one of the two from the 92 tournament?
John Slaney.
John Slaney is one of them who's come up a couple times today. The other one, Chad Penny, who, you know.
Goalie?
Maybe. That's Mike Penny, I think you're thinking.
Oh, Mike Penny. Yeah, okay, sorry. No, I don't, I'm not getting Chad Penny.
Well, there's a few of those names throughout this tournament, but so there you go.
John Slaney.
Couple of noofs holding it down this year for Team Canada.
But I am very interested in checking that guy out.
What else do you have an eye on through this tournament? I have a feeling I know where this is going to end up with a heavy crop of Sens prospects. But
yeah, well, but before I get into that, yeah. And it's a segue to it. Mm. You had a couple of nights ago, you had sent that tweet out with the Bob McKenzie clip, right, with the highlights.
Yeah,
of,
Bob McKenzie's video, you know, essay
John
there.
Carlson in 2010.
Yeah,
and you know the meltdown in Buffalo with I believe it's Tarasenko and Panarin.
Fire in Buffalo.
Yeah, which is forever burning, yes. Right? And I think what makes – and what Bob is saying is we love to dominate this tournament, but not too much, right? You can't walk through it because then you feel like it's not really
– we didn't win anything.
That's not really that big a deal, yeah. Right? So you need to have – you need to have a good black hat. You need to have a foil, right, to the whole thing. And I think of Kovalchuk in Winnipeg, mm-hmm. right? I think of a 17-year-old Ovechkin in Halifax, 03. Yep. The Patrick O'Sullivan off of Fleury, that clip that they showed on there.
Well, even right? In the Vancouver tournament in 05 or 06, whatever, Jack Johnson was – hated, right? Like he was hitting people. He was physical. Like he was a villain, and you wanted that villain.
Yeah, and that is what you need for this tournament to be really successful, right? And so, I'm hoping that you know, COVID aside, and Canada,
yeah, we already have a villain.
but that this can be a good tournament with some really good competition. I think the American team is interesting, right? It presents a bunch of things. As you've said, the goaltending, they have some nice defensive pieces, some mobile guys, not the sturdiest defensive core, I think, right? In terms of what the Americans are bringing,
right.
They're bringing a sort of a mobile team. And apparently from all that I've understood and read, that the forward group just wants to pin the ears back and go.
I've seen that too. Like they're just going to floor it. So that could be fun.
Yes. So you wonder if this is going to be Spencer Knight's tournament just due to the...
it's going to have to be.
He's going to stand on his head and he's going to be peppered, right? And so that to me is super interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And so... And it doesn't hurt that there's two Senators draft picks playing on that team. So
yep,
I'll be interested. And it's another great comparison. I referenced back to the draft and the Byfield Stützle comparison, and it comes down to the Jake Sanderson and Jamie Drysdale comparison, right? Again, two defensive guys who went, I believe, back to back in terms of, or if not two picks apart,
right.
No, back to back, 5 and 6, I believe. So I'll be interested in seeing what that comparison looks like too. That'll be an interesting development to watch as we work our way through. Mm-hmm. That's really the thing. The Americans are really the team that I'm most interested in watching, other than Canada.
Yeah, to me, I want to get a look at the Russians, who by many accounts, and it's funny, we're having this conversation. We joke on this show all the time that, you know, we don't follow junior hockey that closely until it's this, and we sit down and talk about all these kids that we barely know. This year, we know less about them than ever. But what we do know is that the Russians are playing. They've been in the KHL. They've been in tournaments, as you've referenced. They've been in the MHL, which is kind of their junior league. They're going to be in full flight, and not many other guys are going to have that, right? Certainly in terms of the Americans and the Canadians. The Americans have had some of their university programs going and some of them not, so they're going to be kind of a blend. We got almost nobody going, but the Russians are going to come hard and by all accounts have a very good team that I don't know a ton about, but again, backed by the kid last year, Askarov. He was supposed to be a star last year, and the coach just seemed to want to He kept going back to Miftahov there, who was better in the 19-year-old, just a little more steady and mature. This year, it's clearly going to be Askarov's tournament. And, you know, I think he went, number 10 in the first round this year to the Jets, wasn't it?
No, Nashville.
That's right. It was Nashville. But, so went early on in the draft. And by all accounts, he's, like, taking his game up another notch and is just a stud. And the Russians are always good. And the fact that they'll have their legs moving maybe faster than some of these other teams could be really interesting. So they're the other one I'm really into.
I want to see who is the, and again, we, you know, they have, as you've talked about, the Leaf draft pick,
Rodion
Amarov, which makes him the next Pavel Bure,
obviously, because
drafted into the center of the universe. But I think Pud Colson is on this.
Yes, he is. Yep.
Is back this year.
New coach, Igor Larionov.
Yeah, interesting. We'll see how that works.
Less
out
walking too. Around on the boards, yelling at guys.
Yeah, less 100% less unibrow.
Well, that's a shame.
Guy with his classic Brezhnev look. he's gone. Now we got the professor.
Yeah.
With very little coaching experience, right?
Yeah.
Hall of Fame playing career, but we'll see how that works out, right? In terms of, but I'm interested to see who is that Russian guy who, you know, we all knew about Malkin, we all knew about Ovechkin, we all knew about, you know, Kovalchuk. We all had these ideas of these big Russian names.
Radulov,
and yet every year one of these guys, like I said, that is completely under the radar. Your Tarasenko's, your Kucherov's, like these guys that you just really don't know.
Kuznetsov was on that same Buffalo team that blew us
right.
up.
Well, there are three guys, and I think it was Tarasenko, Panarin, and
Kuznetsov. That was the Kuznetsov. Line. Yeah,
hey, that's not a bad line.
Nope.
Right, I want to. I'm always interested to see who is going to be that Russian player that you had never heard of before, who stands out and is that guy. Cause every year there is one, right? And you go, look at that guy.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, that is something to watch. Right. The Finns also have had a pile of players playing in either their junior or in the SM Liga.
Yep.
Right. So, Robi Yaravente, another, Sens pick who was playing, He's supposed to be on the top line for Finland as well.
Anton Lander will be the straw that stirs the drink for them too, as their number one center, and they named him captain. And I think you're right. The third guy on that top line is a kid named Pustula. I don't know much about him, but he was supposed to be kind of the trigger man there, and he got left behind with COVID concerns, I believe.
Okay, so. And what about Atu Rati not making the team?
Yeah, well, what do I know, right? Like,
no, but he was a guy who was supposed to be like, look at that guy.
Yeah. Do you, the Finns, like by all accounts, from what I like, this is supposed to be kind of a step back year for them a little bit, both because of the virus and just this age group, I guess, wasn't, now they are one of those teams that, similar to Canada, they'll grind it out. Like they may surprise some people, but on talent, this apparently isn't going to be one of their strongest go arounds.
Yeah. Yeah, you mean like the team they sent to the Men's World Championships last year or the year before, where you like they had one NHL player and they just, it's like they crank these guys out in a little cookie cutter factory and all they do is get out there and they play tenacious hockey and
just stick and with you and irritate the piss out of you till it's 1-1 with 2 minutes to go in the third.
Little Asatikinens, banana hot dog.
Where is the banana hot dog? Yeah, exactly, man.
Like these kinds of guys. And so you can never count out the Finns, like ever.
No.
Right. So to me, it's, they'll be good. They'll be, but I am concerned that if you look at Canada playing in a division with Finland being the other sort of top dog, and then it's Germany.
Top banana
it's,
hot dog.
Yeah. It's honestly the
Germans,
it's Germany,
Swiss, and. We're on the weak side of the bracket.
For sure. And that
the Russians,
you.
Swedes, and Americans all on the other side. Yeah, you may roll through the round robin here feeling like you have your legs moving and have somebody just punch you in the face in the crossover.
Now, if we finish first in this division and you end up getting the Czechs or whatever,
wherever that
fourth place team is on the other side, that'll be a step up.
Sure.
But
at some point, you need your mettle tested a little, right?
And for sure, because it scares you when you roll through, and you and I have this conversation every year.
Yep.
Right? Do you want to get tested early, or do you want to gradually work your way up to it? And I like the way it worked last year. Right? Got blitzed by the Russians early.
Also faced the Americans right away.
Yeah, work your way through the tournament, and you win a gold medal. Like to me, as opposed to working your way up through some of the minnows and then getting slapped in the face by the Finns in the quarters and losing in Vancouver a couple years ago.
Sorry, Mikey. Couple things we also always ask on this show, and I know you've been studying for it all year. Let me set it up for the new listener. Every year, just on reputation, I'm giving Rob time to think now. I can hear the hamster running over there. Every year we end up talking about the Eberle goal against the Russians. Geez. Oh no, is he? And you know, Everly scores 5 seconds left. Can you believe it? And every year I ask Rob, what was the name of the Russian goalie? And he never has it, but he has said it multiple times this year that he's had it.
I spent the summer, it came up in the summertime, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And so then it's like, dunk. And then it's kind of laying dormant for a couple of months, but his name is, it's Jalobniak.
It is Jalobniak. What's the goalie's name?
Yes, guy. First time in the whatever, however many years we've been doing this. podcast, five Christmases or whatever this is.
Yeah. The other thing, on this note a little bit, I was just doing a little research, and so I'm watching some old videos, and I'm looking at World Juniors past. Man, that 2010 team in Saskatoon, the year after Ottawa, and everybody remembers Eberle, you know, he scores the goal to tie the game, and he scored in the shootout against the Russians, and then Canada goes on to play Sweden in a 7-2 kind of anticlimactic whatever. He was every bit, if not better, in that Saskatoon year, and I was watching the highlights of the gold medal game. Which
you're talking about Jalobniak?
No, I'm talking about Jordan Eberle. I only know one thing about Jalobniak, and it's that he happened to be in the net when Everly scored his... But the next year, they go to Saskatoon, and that's the Alex Petrangelo year. That is the Nazem Kadri year. And
that's the John Carlson year.
That is the John Carlson year, and the Americans win the game in overtime. And I think that's why this isn't discussed anywhere near as much. Canada's down 2 with like 2 minutes left in the third, and Eberle scores both goals to tie it up. If Canada somehow wins that game, the Jordan Eberle hype train that was already off the charts, like, it to me, that's so much more. I guess part of it is, you know, obviously you went on to win the game, right? But those two goals to tie it up, as opposed to the one kind of fluky one, unreal, man. Like, what a... And it's funny to think, like, oh, you never lived up in the NHL. The guy's like a 20-goal-a-season guy for, like, a decade now. And, well, he's just never been quite... He's been fine, right? But two goals in that American game, almost as impressive as, if not more impressive to me, than the Russian game in Ottawa the year before.
Well, and the thing is, yeah, he's played 10 years in the NHL, period, right?
Like, yeah, no, exactly. You
know, like, oh, he hasn't lived up to it. What he hasn't scored... You know,
he's still game there.
Tying goals with 2 seconds left, you know, every year, you know, like these things do not happen. And I still say it, right? I was there.
Yeah.
Live for that game.
Yep.
Right. Not like everybody who says that, you know, they saw you two at Barrymore's in 1978, whatever your deal is, that you weren't really there.
With the 250,000 people that apparently fit into the dome when Joe Carter hit his home run.
For sure. For sure. And to me, that was incredible. And the difference is, right, I was also at the 03 World Juniors in Halifax, and you sort of go, that's a team that won a silver medal, and that's a team that won a gold medal, right?
Right, sure.
And to me, as you said, it's winning versus losing.
Yep.
Right? When you win, everything is sweeter and bigger and bolder and better, right? The achievements.
How clutch, right? Like, man.
Well, what happens if Canada loses in that shootout and Taves still scores those three goals? We still talking about it?
Probably doesn't really matter very much, does it?
Right.
Or this if Canada loses, I wonder, if Canada loses to Sweden in Ottawa in the gold medal game, do we give a shit about the fact they beat the Russians in the... It's still a dramatic way to win the semi, but we're not still... Like, most people think that was the gold medal game that year.
Yeah, well, because that's all that anybody remembers.
Yeah, of course.
And the gold medal game was so anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Right? I think it was 6-1 or 6-0 or, right? And sort of nobody wants to see that either.
Markstrom,
right?
I believe, in goal. And I know we've talked about Hedman and Carlson, I believe. No, not Carlson.
Yep. Carlson and Hedman were the.
And I think Markstrom was the goal.
For sure. So pretty, for sure he was.
Yeah, pretty good Swedish team there, but just got worked that night.
I'm trying to think of, I think Runblad was on that team as well.
Hey.
So, yeah, no, that was a...
Other Sens fame.
Well, and you look at, they parlayed him into Kyle Turris.
Yep.
Not
bad.
if you look at it, I think the Swedes are going on 14 years of undefeated round robin, or is it 12?
It here in front of me, 52-0 in the round robin. So
13 years.
I asked Gord Miller about that. If you haven't had the chance, you should go back. We had Gord Miller on the podcast a week or two ago, and we obviously had to talk a little World Juniors. And I asked him, like, why is this a thing? And do you think they'd be happier to just, whoops, burped one up against somebody and be done with it, right? And I said, like, these are kids. They're a different group every year. It can't be mental, can it? And he said, well, the Chicago Cubs weren't. It's not been the same Cubs for 100 years that didn't win the World Series, right? It's not been the same Leafs for 50 years. At some point, though, you get asked about it and you get, you know, is this going to be the year? And will you, you know, you win 52 round robin games in a row and only have one gold medal to show for it. I'll be interested. I'll ask you what I asked him. Does it mean anything, or is this just one of those holy shit, like weird flukes?
Well, when I heard Henrik Alfredsson on the radio when he had found out that he wasn't going to be eligible to go,
yeah,
he brought that up. He brought it up, and he was saying that, you know, he and Daniel were talking about it and how fascinating the concept is that, and as you've just touched on, that it continues to go on over and over again with, you know, a different generation of players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't really put a finger on it either, right? And he came the closest to it, and I think he's the only one who could, as a Swedish born and trained player. He's saying, yeah, I'm not sure if maybe the development of how we develop players don't prepare them for clutch times.
The stress times of a tournament, yeah,
right. That they're you know, there's no scores. It's heavy skill development. But he didn't say that. But he, to me,
right, because you're condemning an entire generation to being weak minded, which is that's a hell of an accusation for him to hint at, and me to blow out of the water and make a full thing. But it is what it seems to look like when it's nice and easy, and half of those wins, no different than Canada's or anybody else. There's always some weaker teams in your division that you don't count on losing those, but they keep beating Canada and the US and the Russians and the Finns in the round robin over and over and over. And yet once you get to semifinal or final time, they find a way to burp it up. And I don't get that, man. It's odd to me, maybe more than anything else. And he'd know better than I do, obviously, about how they train players in Sweden. It seems more likely to me to just be one of those crazy flukes than to suggest Swedish kids don't have the mental toughness to deal with it. But
agreed.
I bet you they would be, maybe not these, you know, this group of players, but the management and the whatever wouldn't mind if we lost to the Americans on the 27th or whenever they're going to face them, and just be done with this storyline, right? Just have this go away.
Oh, I think this is going to be their year.
Craig Button said that as much too. He said, I am guaranteeing it ends this year with what they're bringing versus what the Russians and the Americans are bringing, and they're all in the same pool. So
I was looking at
Craig's been bullish with his predictions.
Yeah, for sure. Well, strong opinions, man. Strong opinions. He should be the next guy on the podcast. Strong opinions.
All right.
I was looking back at some fun facts in terms of it. Well, not really. In terms of the history of the World Juniors and who's won what, and who's won how many times, and clearly the Russians, when you combine the Soviet Union with Russia and the 1 year of the CIS, which CIS won the gold.
Yep.
Right. They are out in front of Canada. They've won, I believe, whatever it is. But if I was to ask you who has won the third most gold medals in WJC history, who would you?
I know there's a huge drop off. I think Canada's at 14. 18. Okay. I believe the Americans are at 4. So it's the Swedes or the Finns, or like the West Germans or something. The Finns. I'll take the Finns.
Finns for 200, Alex. Yeah, it's true. They won 5 gold medals.
Okay. Yeah.
The Swedes in the history history of the tournament, two.
Like that's, two gold medals. That's wild, man.
Yeah. And this is just more, and that's a country that takes it super seriously. Yeah. Like
it, when they've gotten on board with this thing over the years, we used to rip Europe all the time for not caring. The Swedes care now.
Well, the Swedes and the Finns, that's where you want to go in terms of, as long as they're winning or doing well. Yeah, right. Yeah. But, it is an interesting thing to look at. Right. And when you can't punch it over the top, sooner or later, yeah, people start to raise questions. Well, I was also
52-0. It's a reasonable question to ask.
You look at the sort of the 90s as that sort of golden era of Canadian World Juniors, where we won 7 of the 10 in the 90s.
Yep.
You look back, how do you think? You know, they went from 97, when they won in 97, 98 till 03, I believe, without winning at all, right? They went from winning 6 in a row to going, I believe, 6 years in a row without winning at all.
1 year where they were like 7th or something, like just yeah, some 90, debacle.
98.
Yeah.
No medals in 98. Like they didn't even finish in the top three.
Right.
Right. And then they went 04, 05, 06, 07, 08, 09.
Yeah.
Right. They went through this big run again.
Yep.
Would you be surprised to know that in the teens, so in this last decade that we just finished, 4 times Canada finished out of the medals?
No, because it seemed like when we lost, we were really losing. So we already referenced the Vancouver tournament 2 years ago. We lost in the quarters to the Finns, right?
Yep.
There was another one... I think against
on that broken stick.
Yeah.
Things come back the other way.
And then there was one a couple years, maybe 2013, 2014, where the Russians punted us out. After Canada almost came back, I think that was Vasilevsky in goal for the Russians. So there are a couple, there are a couple that stand out. I don't know if I'm shocked that it's 4, but yeah, like I could believe that it's four. It's been an up and down kind of, and I think part of it is the extra pressure that we do put on kids here, but the rest of the world catching up a bit and starting to care more too. And some of these teams are, I think most years that we go into this, we're the deepest team typically, but I think there's been quite a few years maybe in this last decade where, yes, we've been the deepest, but maybe our top line versus their top line were maybe a little outmatched.
Yeah, in terms of skill development.
Yeah, the high-end cat talent coming back against you.
Well,
just a theory.
You mean in terms of generational kind of talents.
We're trotting Dylan Strom and Braden Shen out as our number one centers. And you're like, yeah.
Scotty Upshaw.
Okay. And they're pretty good. And you're like, but is it, you know, Kuznetsov or Malkin? Yeah, whoever it might be, right? Like, I don't know. It's just, I think the sheer number of players we can produce, we are still by far the deepest. And that's often what can hold it for us. But, you know, other than McDavid's, the tournament in Toronto 2015. I can't think off the top of my head of a year in this decade where we by far had the best player in the tournament.
Thomas Chabot.
Sure. Was he better than Charlie McAvoy?
Deemed to be defenseman and MVP of the tournament.
All right. Well, I can see why you want to cling to this one.
But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. He is not an Ovechkin. He is not a Patrick Kane. You know, these sorts of things, right? In that Bob McKenzie package you sent along, he had the Phil Kessel goal. Man, that's a sweet goal.
Yeah, for sure it was. I think that was in the same Vancouver Jack Johnson year maybe, but I could be wrong about that.
Who knows? Who knows, Matt?
Anything else you wanted to get to as we kind of kick around the World Juniors this year?
No. Well, I think if there's a silver lining to the NHL not getting started up till the next middle of next month, hopefully,
yep,
fingers crossed, Usually I have this terrible World Junior hangover.
Yes.
Right. Where the hype is so great and the
Canada, Russia for gold on Sunday, Leafs and Canes on Monday. You're like,
this is it. Right. And you sort of go, oh, the sort of letdown from how keenly you are observing every bit of minutia and soaking up every little factoid you can get your hands on. And then, yeah, as you say, it comes down to blah. And you're like, hey.
Like a week or two, and then it's the All-Star break, and then we've had these weeks off, right, the bye weeks, and it just kind of seems to kill the NHL for a month or so anyway.
Whereas this will end, hopefully, with Canada winning a gold medal. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be able to sort of ease back into training camps. We'll be open. We'll be getting all the minutia as to what kind of stash Austin Matthews is rocking this year.
I hope it's just so dirty. Like, I hope he's rocking back in, ready to just upset people.
Too late. I haven't even seen him. I'm upset. So yeah. That to me is, that's the other thing that we have to sort of, in air quotes, look forward to as this whole thing rolls out.
Well, the other thing that we always do on this episode, I always ask you on a scale of 1 to 10, your level of excitement for the World Juniors this year.
Super high. 9.
Okay.
Hockey withdrawal. And you went back and you said, just to double back to something you said earlier, which I meant to be outraged at the time, but I've had a little bit of eggnog, and I'm feeling less than outraged. When you talked about knowing less about this, about, you know, these kids this year, I think because the Sens had the two picks up high, right? I am more aware of.
That's fair. All I meant is where they're at this year, right?
Like, I get that in terms of the progress right now. But if you look at with the Swedes with Raymond and Holtz, and you look at Marco Rossi playing for the Austrians, who are back in the A division, right?
Yeah.
All these sorts of, you know, to me, it's as a Sens fan, you have your fingers in a bunch of different pies because you were so keen. Who are we going to take? You know, which little bag of candy do you grab?
That's fair.
You're
right.
And so I am. I'll be very interested to see how a bunch of these other teams and these other storylines progress.
Well, as I said off the top, this is always one of our more popular episodes of the year. I'm glad that it's established itself on Christmas Eve. We always get cool feedback about people are commuting. Maybe there'll be a little less of that this year, or just, you know, tweets late at night saying wrapping up the last couple presents and having some rum and eggnog and listen to the World Junior show. We hope you guys are as excited for the tournament as we are, and we're glad that you have stuck it out with us and are back joining us for this year and that little TCA tradition that we got going on. If you are by chance commuting somewhere, lose your fucking keys, as I'm wont to say, and I get ripped for every now and then for having it be a bit cliche, but when you get where you're going, turn us on and then lose your fucking keys. In the meantime, I don't want to give away too much. There might be a little something extra under the tree on Christmas Day from Tall Can Audio. So if you're squirming to get away from family, or you're spending a little time alone and looking for a distraction or something to keep you company, maybe just check your podcast feed. There might be something under there or on there on Christmas Day for you. That's it for another year, man. World Junior previews in the hopper for another year.
Well, people love it because the hockey's so damn good.
That's what I hear.
That's what I hear.
Merry Christmas, boss.
Merry Christmas to you, too, and Merry Christmas to all the fine, fine listeners out there.
We will see you all tomorrow. Outside the carolers start to sing. I can't describe the joy they bring, because joy is something they don't bring me. My girlfriend is by my side. From the roof are hanging sickles of ice. Their whiny voices get irritating. It's Christmas time again. So I stand with a dead smile on my face, wondering how much of my time they'll waste. Oh God, I hate these Satan's helpers. And then I guess I must have snapped, because I grabbed a baseball bat.
Christmas time again. It's time to be nice to the people you can't stand. All year, I'm growing tired of all this Christmas cheer. You people scare me. Please stay away from my home. If you don't want to get me down, just leave the presents and then leave me alone. Christmas time again. It's time to be nice to the people you can't stand. All year I'm growing tired.